Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark. Harry, thanks for being with us today.
Good morning, Leanne, and it's always a pleasure to be with you.
We want to talk a little bit about the regular monthly meeting of the fiscal court, which happened earlier this week. But before we get into that, let's talk about what we've been talking about for quite some time. COVID numbers are going back up in our community. The numbers from the Gateway Area Health Department District, they're back to putting updates online every single day. And it seems like, we didn't want to have this conversation, but it seems like everything is continuing to spiral a bit, which is a scary thing for this community.
Yes, it is, Leanne, and everyone should be concerned about it. We went, as I mentioned in court yesterday, we went from starting to take our mask off and relax a little bit back to maybe we got to do that for a couple months, and then the uptick started again, and the Delta variant raised its head, and we're back to where we were during the height of the pandemic, but probably in worse shape. We approached hospital capacity before, but I think we're at the capacity now, and they're starting to have to reconfigure some other rooms for COVID. And the problem with all of that is, when you increase your COVID, you decrease your other services that you normally perform. They haven't got to that point yet. They still do everything that they should be doing, but there's going to be a point where there's going to be a trade-off. And, yesterday in the district, we had 53 across the district yesterday, and six of those were in Round County. And the big topic is always on my Facebook post is, well, how many of those were vaccinated? Well, it runs about, I started getting those numbers a couple of weeks and I started posting them. It's about 19% have been vaccinated. So it's pretty doggone good odds that if you've been vaccinated, you're not going to end up with COVID. And if you do, it's a case where it's mild enough, you probably won't need to be treated in the hospital. I'm not saying never, but that has been the norm that you get it and you can shake it yourself. But it's very important for people to be vaccinated. And like I said yesterday, Round County, the folks in Round County pull together when they need to. If a flood or ice storm or any disaster, they always pull together and help each other. They really need to pull together now. And the way they can help each other now is just get the vaccine. And let's get this, hopefully just start putting it back behind us again. Because we're getting ready to go into the fall and winter months, and everybody's going to be in a house, and it's going to really take off from there. So, and school starting, universities back in, all of those negatives that we fought so hard last year, we're getting ready to fight them again.
I know that you had some really frank words with the fiscal court to share with the community about misinformation about vaccines and about masking. It's kind of amazing to me, and not in a good way, that misinformation is still so prevalent after we've been fighting this pandemic for so many months. But still, within our community, we're seeing people who don't want to get vaccinated, don't want to wear a mask. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to kind of reiterate your message to the community about that, because it is still a huge problem.
Yesterday I thought I made it, and I made it as clear as I could that, there is no conspiracy theory that I was ever known to happen that could possibly be as a bigger conspiracy theory as this. So it's not a conspiracy theory. This, you can't get a conspiracy theory to go worldwide. So it has nothing to do with that. It has absolutely nothing to do with the election. These folks in these third world countries, they could care less who the president of the United States is. They could care less who the county judge executive is in Round County. But they're dying at a rapid pace. They're dying because they don't have the health care that we are fortunate enough to have. They don't even have the vaccine capability that we have. So it's not political. I mean, it can't be. People say, well, it's political. It's not political. If it was political, it would be contained in the United States. It's not. It's all over this place, all over the world. So get the political out of your mind, conspiracy theory out of your mind, and then the chip implant is crazy. And I said that yesterday. You could look at the vial. I mean, how would you put something in you that's, I mean, my goodness, how would you, it's just crazy. How would you even get anything? It just beyond my capability to comprehend how anybody could think that particular theory. So it's nothing like that. People need to get that out of their mind. They need to get the vaccine. If we don't, we're never going to get this behind us. If we don't get to 70-80% vaccination rate, we're going to have this same discussion over and over. But there'll be fewer and fewer people that hears that discussion, because eventually the death rate will start increasing. It's already been increasing, but it will continue to increase.
Mm-hmm. Now, we heard recently that St. Clair was mandating vaccinations for their employees, as are many, many health facilities across the nation. That's becoming a new trend. Is there any discussion for county employees or other organizations within the community that you may be privy to about requiring vaccinations?
We have not. Of course, it's always on your mind when you're in leadership. There's a little bit of difference between the hospital and county workers. The hospital folks and they're in direct contact with COVID patients on a daily basis, and in direct contact with the healthcare staff that's really going to have to be charged with taking care of folks. But if, in the county departments, we're pretty thin, to be honest with you. I mean, there's essentially four people in my office. We've all been vaccinated, but we're all in separate offices, essentially. So the road department, they're outside all the time. They're working outside all the time. And I'm not saying that they shouldn't get their vaccines. We've had a pretty good rate here of vaccines in the county employees. But it's a little bit different mandating that than the hospital is mandating theirs. Mm-hmm. So it's a struggle. And I can tell you that the board and Mr. Lloyd, all the other hospitals that joined that wasn't something they woke up in the middle of the night and said, I think we're just going to make that policy tomorrow. They've wrestled with that, I'm sure, without a doubt, for a number of months trying to figure this out. Mm-hmm. And they determined that was the best course, and that's the way they went. So I don't know of any mandatory vaccinations associated with the state or with the counties at this time that I'm aware of.
But like everything with this pandemic, it's kind of one of those things that can always happen. It's just depending on how things continue to go. And there are people in the community who have talked to me about, pressing our community leaders for answers about certain things, like how many people need to be infected before we go back into lockdown? How many people, getting COVID or active COVID cases do we have before we cancel school or cancel classes at MSU? And really, there's no hard and set rule for any of these organizations, it seems, because there's so many different factors that you have to take into consideration when you're making these kinds of decisions.
There is no, there's no stick diagram, no, as I call it, no diagram you follow this and yes, you do this, or no, you don't do this. It's not there, because the situation changes every day. Every situation is different. So what may be affecting one portion of and we'll just use the school, it may be, a hot spot in one particular area, and they can continue everywhere else. It's very difficult to set a set of standards or guides that says this is where we draw the line. You can't do that. It would be nice. That would take a whole lot of pressure off of the leadership, but it's just not there. But the leadership consults with, the school board, the university, myself, the mayor, You know, we're in constant contact with the healthcare professionals, folks who are trained to do this. And so we listen to them. We talk to them on a daily basis. So it's not something that really that, I mean, at the end of the day, yes, the dotted line, somebody has to make the decision and sign the executive order or the order, but it's a collaborative effort, and a lot of information passes before you do that. And there's a lot of variables, and something that I may not see, someone else will. So it's easy to sit on the sideline and say, well, I think they should just close this down or make this mandatory, but it's just not that simple. I wish it was.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
The Morehead Theater Guild presents 110 Stories by Susan Tuft. Memorializing 9/11 by sharing the stories no one saw on the news, this play is a powerful and humanizing account of New York City's darkest day. Presented 4 days only at the Round County Arts Center, September 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and 2 p.m. on Sunday. Not recommended for children under age 12. Tickets are now on sale at moreheadtheater.org or call 606-783-9857.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Harry Clark, the judge executive here in Rowan County. Harry, thanks again for joining us. We want to talk a little bit about the regular meeting of the fiscal court that happened earlier this week. A lot of things on the agenda. I know that the road foreman was there, and there was a lot to talk about as far as resurfacing and road closures. Really, the work on the roads is amping up right now.
Well, it is. You know, it's summertime, so it's time to get as much work in as we can. You know, when I first came into office, we implemented and designed a road plan, and we've been working that plan and sticking with it. And that brings us to a lot of cross trains that was never replaced before, that probably should have been replaced a number of years ago. So that brings us into a lot of road closures when we have to replace a cross drain. A lot of our roads have two, you know, dual access in and out, but sometimes that's not always the case. But we posted on our website. We also purchased a big sign from the salvage that allows us to post it on a road and say when the road will be closed and for how long. And that's been working out very well. The major portion of the cross drains have been replaced. We still probably got 15 to 20 to go. The resurfacing, Hinkle has the contract to do the resurfacing for us with just a little over $1 million of resurfacing going down. The roads that are being done are on our website, and we've published it, I think, in the paper. But it's going to start in September, and we hope to get all of the resurfacing done before it gets cold, because it's important to get it done. You have to stop when it's at certain temperatures. But we're hoping to get it done beginning in September and finish it up in early October.
Now, one of the things that's been continually talked about for several months now, and we didn't think it was going to take this long, but the new building for the ambulance service, EMS, is going to be out where, I don't know what it originally was, but I know it was an MSU building for a while out there by the VFW. Tell us a little bit about how things are going with that particular building.
Well, we were way behind on the opening of it. We signed a contract in May of 20, and it was supposed to be completed in 110 days. And you can see where we're at now. So we're well into August. We still got some discrepancies, but it was important to move the ambulance service from its location behind the Carl Perkins Center. Mm-hmm. There is no AC. The crews really needed to be somewhere where they could get some cool air back when we had those 90-degree days and they're on their way back. So we had a temporary occupancy certification from the state, so we moved them into the building. We've got a few things left to do. Contractors, I hope, will get that done here within the next week, and we'll get the final occupancy permit updated from a temporary to permanent, and we hope to be able to do a ribbon cutting in the very near future of our new ambulance service and show the public what we've actually accomplished. It's quite a it's really a good investment. We purchased the old it used to be the Kentucky Warehouse, and then it was Abner Construction, and then it was Morehead State University's procurement building, and now it is County Services Building. But it allowed us some additional office space out there to consolidate and put some new office or to have more office space. Allows us the opportunity in the future to move the road department out there, and providing us the opportunity to sell where the current location of the road department is. And I believe the way that'll work out is we'll have very little upfront money in this whole project for the road department, the ambulance service and all, simply based on the fact of the property that will probably sell and do quite well. So it was a good deal. We got the ambulance service built. It's about $380,000. That was because of the way we built it. We had one initial estimate of about $4.4 million. So you can see the significant savings. And we have about 10 acres out there, so we can expand. But it was a good deal for the county. We just have to bear with it till we get through the construction phase, and we're getting close to it.
The fiscal court also discussed the tax rates for the 2022 fiscal year. So tell me a little bit. You guys went over the motor vehicle and watercraft tax rates and also the real and personal property tax rates. I assume that both of those are passed at this point?
Well, no. The motor vehicle tax rate is passed because we were fortunate enough to get second reading on it. Property and personal tax, we could not pass that because we had the first reading in the last meeting, but the certification changed on us. We did it with one certification. The PBA's office had to do some different certification. They got it to Frankfurt and they sent us a new tax rate, and they calculate that for us to give us the opportunity to continue with the current rate, lower the rate, raise the rate, or take what they call the compensating rate, which is what we normally, I think we've done that even when I was a magistrate. I don't ever remember raising the rates. We just simply take the compensating rate. It was actually lower than it was last year. Last year it was 7.1. This year it was 7.0.
So really not a lot. I mean, what's listed on the agenda says no change except for real property, which was a decrease. So
yes.
Probably everybody's going to be happy with that one.
Yes. Everybody should be happy.
Now, finally, I wanted to just touch on briefly the broadband RFP discussion. During the pandemic shutdowns, the fact that there is some disparity among the residents of Rowan County having access to high-speed internet, that was something we kind of knew before, but it was like, hey, this is really, really important and needs to be addressed ASAP. The community filled out a survey, broadband survey, spent some time doing that. It didn't take individuals much time, but I know that you wanted to get as many people participating in that as possible. So the study or the survey was finished, and now the fiscal court is asking for requesting ideas from businesses that are going to be working on making broadband happen. What's the discussion at this point about that?
Well, you're correct, Leanne. We did ask, we did some tests and some surveys. We also had some grant money that we applied for and received to do a broadband feasibility study. That came back about 6 months ago. I actually initiated that when I first came into office that we needed to look at this. We are now with that study that we had approved through grant funding and the support we had from the citizens. We have proven now that we are certainly eligible for additional grant funding to actually do the work. So we have went out with an RFP to get companies to tell us what it would cost us to put fiber to the door to every home in Round County. We've had three proposals. It's the, some of them are not fiber to the door. Some of them are just high-speed broadband. So they met the requirements of actually of RFP. So we have three to choose from. We've narrowed that down to two at this time. We have a committee meeting set up for this Thursday that will interview one of the companies. The other one is set up for the following week. We'll interview the second company. That committee is going to come back to us, make a recommendation to the court of which direction we need to go. I've been working with Frankfurt to get grant money for this particular install of fiber. And it's really looking promising that we will have high-speed broadband to nearly every resident in Round County. And I believe that'll happen within the next year to year and a half.
Now, I'm the kind of person who prepares for the worst and hopes for the best. And I hate to be that person sometimes, but it seems like we've been having the broadband discussion for quite some time. There have been different people who've come in and made some big promises. You know, I've been in meetings where they've talked about, like, the Kentucky Wired project seemed like it was going to be great, and now I'm not really sure that it was totally successful for, or not everything that was promised happened. And then, you know, there's been individual businesses who have come in and talked about giving, you know, providing internet within the community, and then you never see them again. But this is a project that you're pretty confident is going to happen.
I'm very confident in it. We've worked this hard from the very beginning. And, you know, I have engaged the community. I have a representative on this committee from MSU, MCTC, the hospital, the school board, my office, the city. You know, we've tackled this from every angle that we can. And the difference between what you're hearing from me now than what you've heard from all of these shoe salesmen in the past is we've got this documented and it's on paper. So, you know, it's easy to come in and say, yeah, we can do this and we can do that. We'll, you know, just give us this much money to get started. But we've actually got this. This is a proposal with money. This is a proposal with how they're going to do this. And this is a proposal of what will be the result of that. And it's on paper. So it's something we can hold them to. And we certainly will hold them to it. And when we enter a contract, we'll have some language in there that's, you know, it's pretty enforceable language. So we're very confident that if we can move in make the next couple steps, then we'll be in a run from there. That's essentially the easiest way I can say it. I've worked with Frankfurt. I'm confident that we will be eligible for some grant funding, and I'm confident in the two companies that we have as the front runners. I'm confident in their ability to perform.
And unfortunately, we're out of time here on Open Mic. Judge Executive Harry Clark, I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
Well, Leanne, it's always a pleasure to be here. It's always good to represent the citizens of Round County. I certainly enjoy my job. It's difficult at times. And once again, I'm just going to reach out to everyone and ask if you please, put all your differences aside, go get the vaccine, and let's get this put behind us so our kids can go back to school. We can sit together at football games and see each other in a grocery store and see our teeth again.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.